Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with Attorney Leslie Barrows of the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas, serving Tarrant County and the greater DFW Metroplex in family law, criminal defense, juvenile law, and estate planning. This is the Barrows Law Firm Review, a monthly internet radio show podcast featuring information about Texas law and events that affect families and the community of attorneys and professionals who serve them. Attorney Leslie Barrows is our featured guest today as she shares insight and information about our 5th and 14th Amendment right to due process of law, and she reminds us that we are all innocent until proven guilty by a court of law. For more information about the Barrows Firm, please visit barrowsfirm.com and also find them as well on Facebook and Twitter with the handle Attorney Barrows. Don't forget to stop by the firm's testimonials page on the website and on LinkedIn and avo.com. Again, today's show is Your Right to Due Process of Law in a Criminal Case with Attorney Leslie Barrows. A few of the things we'll talk about today, we'll first ask, what innocent until proven guilty means in a criminal case. We'll talk about the criminal justice process from investigation to arrest and trial. We'll talk about the right to due process of law being protected by the 5th and 14th Amendments. We'll talk about the due process application to life, liberty, and property, and what happens if your procedural due process rights are violated. I'm here with Leslie Barrows. She's the principal founder of the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas, in her firm's main practice areas of family law, criminal defense, and juvenile law, Leslie is consistently challenged with dynamic cases and clients. When winning is what matters, many in the Fort Worth area go to the Barrows Firm based on their reputation and winning track record over the past decade. Leslie Barrows earned her undergraduate degree from Sam Houston State University, and she earned her law degree from the Oklahoma City University School of Law. She is a member of numerous organizations and primarily focused in Tarrant County. For more information, dial 817-481-1583 for the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas. Before we get moving today, this is a general information program, and any advice shared on this show does not constitute legal advice, and listening to our program cannot give rise to an attorney-client relationship. You have specific questions about any of our content on today's program, call the Barrows Firm directly and make an appointment by dialing area code 817-481-1583. All broadcast rights are reserved, and it's time to say hello to Ms. Leslie Barrows.
Hello. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. And happy tumultuous weather season. And Happy allergy season, as I will fight to get through this. I have more of a voice today than yesterday, so things are good.
Oh, I know. With the weather, it just keeps going back and forth, and your head doesn't know what to do.
Absolutely, your head doesn't know what to do, and, you know, we just plug through it, you know, but there are worse things than suffering from allergies. You could suffer from a due process of law violation. That would be much worse. And so what we're here today to do is talk about innocent until proven guilty, what this means, and I'm going to just start by suggesting that the motion picture industry, the television programs we watch, are all very interesting in that we take our understanding often of how the world works and what the law may be from what we see on TV. Now, whether we're watching movies or we're watching Cops or that show Jail that comes on afterwards, by the way, I love those shows. I binge watch them on Saturday nights. There's a lot of variation to what people believe as far as what their rights are. So, Leslie, let's just jump in. What does innocent until proven guilty really mean?
Well, to me, it's actually allowing someone that could possibly be charged with any kind of criminal offense, I think a lot of times we lose that people are innocent when we're watching the news and the media. I think people are quick to judge. So a lot of that has been, we have lost that in the criminal justice system, but, we have to basically put the state of Texas and through, you know, law enforcement and prosecution, they have to prove these cases, you know. It's not just, hey, you could be a suspect and you're picked up and there you go, you're guilty. And then let's start from here. And you have to disprove that everything the state has, you know, I guess against someone that's accused of a crime, that, you know, you would have to prove that you're not innocent.
Well, yeah. And when we look at times when the, you know, we talk about the court of law versus the court of public opinion, as you say, the second things hit the news, oftentimes people will read the headlines, look at the picture, maybe, you know, I don't think they even read the articles half the time, and they form their own opinion. You know, and that opinion's validated if they see things in other places. So, when the process is applied where someone is charged with a crime and the state does not prove their case and the person is acquitted and free to go, people sometimes see that as, oh, the lawyers got that person off. They set the murderers, you know, off. They set the bank robbers into the streets. And it's just, that's what's happening. It's that the state has to prove their case. And what would happen if the state wasn't held to strict standards to prove their case along with the Constitution? We could have the application of justice sort of haphazard, which seems a lot more like the Old West.
Right. And we don't, you know, if I was ever in that situation, I would want to make sure that, you know, I had that right and that make them prove their case, you know. And make the law enforcement do their job.
Absolutely. So can you describe to us what this criminal justice process is and how it works along the way?
Well, in the criminal sense, most of the time what you'll encounter is, you know, something has happened and law enforcement comes in and starts their investigation. And then they'll see, you know, they'll gather information, and that's all the information that will be turned over to, you know, the state of Texas through the prosecutor's office. So all that information is so valuable that is collected by, you know, law enforcement in the criminal case, and then it would be turned over to the district attorney's office. So, you know, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on with, you know, the detectives and gathering evidence and crime scene investigations and, you know, obtaining surveillance, all of those things that are really important, interviewing witnesses. I mean, all that is really is imperative and part of, you know, the investigative stage. And then if there was a search warrant needed on a house, of course, the law enforcement would go and get that before a magistrate. Then you would have an arrest warrant for someone who's, you know, possibly could be charged with the crime. So then a magistrate would sign off on that. And then, of course, the person would be able to set bond. And then the whole process starts, you know, in the criminal courts of, you know, going to court and bond conditions and, I mean, all of that until you have a right to a bench trial or a jury trial. So those are all part of the criminal justice process that we have.
You know, a quite good question that comes up at times is, when is a person free to go? And I know most of us know that we have our Miranda rights and our right to, you know, as you are arrested, you are read your rights. But also in the process, I know that there were a few interesting cases in past history where, you know, you look at there's a lot of people involved in a lot of these investigations, as you were talking about. You know, police like to talk to lots of different people, and people sometimes may not really. What I think of the Making a Murderer case up in Wisconsin, which, by the way, I guess some things have been overturned, and the younger kid is actually out free. I think they overturned his case, but the concept of, you know, talking to police. If police stop you at a traffic stop, you know, you're detained at, you know, that makes more sense. But if police are just talking to you generally, some police come to your door, do you have to talk to them? Are you free to go? I mean, I think at what people are.
Yeah, you're free
sometimes.
To go. Yeah, but they get confused.
Well, I mean, at what point? I mean, people think that if they walk away, that's going to be a bad thing in the police. So people sort of freeze as a deer in headlights. So I guess could you explain at what point you're in custody and what point you're free to go. And how do people know that?
Yeah, and smart investigators and detectives, they will they'll detain and ask questions, and they won't you won't actually be under arrest. But I think people assume that they are, and really, you know, they could walk away. But I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, you're in the investigative stage, and so people are going through the process, and they could be in shock of, you know, what just happened, or you know, just depends on which kind of issue you're talking about. But but yeah, I mean, you're free to go unless you know they serve you with a warrant.
And I think that, again, that's something that a lot of people don't realize. Also, the concept of consenting to search.
Right. Especially in vehicles. That's a big
one. So what are the rules with that?
So the rules with that is, you know, if you're stopped, then, of course, you would you do not have to consent. But but a lot of people consent and they don't even realize it, and then the search of the vehicle begins. So that is something that usually you would say, hey, you need to go get, you know, a warrant, or are you going to arrest me? If they haven't arrested you, then they're not going to be able to look in the vehicle, or the same thing with your house.
Sometimes, however, they do anyways, which actually happened to me. On a trip out of state, I was stopped and detained because blacked out truck with Texas license plates in East St. Louis, Illinois. I had stopped to get something to drink at 9 in the morning, and they were convinced that I was a drug runner. And I was, you know, can we search a vehicle? No, it's a borrowed vehicle. I borrowed my friend's car that gets better gas mileage. No, I don't give consent to search. I don't know who's been in or out of this vehicle. They don't believe me. They're going to bring dogs. They bring dogs anyways. I was detained for almost 2 hours. Nothing I could have done about it. And they were just convinced that, you know, where are the kilos? They're in there somewhere. And so, you know, law enforcement doesn't always do their job correctly. What happens in that case?
Well, yeah, usually, you know, they're going to detain you, and then they're not going to let you go, even though you want to go. So any information, you know, I guess if you were actually, you know, found to have been charged with something, then eventually you'd be able to say, you know, any information that you obtained that shouldn't be applicable to you, to this case, because I was, you know, you guys were just doing your investigation and I was helping you out, you know.
Right. Again, what if you say, well, I don't want to stay around anymore. I need to take off. Then you're, I guess, what, could be charged with fleeing an investigation or something? Interfering with police investigation?
Yeah, and then they would try to come back and find you eventually and pick you up for any kind of offense that they could, but they'd have to get a warrant.
Well, that's fun.
They just take them. They
that's
just have
fun.
To
well,
get, you know, more information.
Well, and getting warrants today, too, you know, some people say, I mean, it used to be, you know, go get a warrant meant a little bit more, you know, as we've talked about with the
Walk
North Fusel
through
weekend.
The courthouse and everything, yeah.
Yeah, right. Right now, it seems like get a warrant can be done by, you know, with an app on your phone as the officer standing on your door. So technology really kind of has changed things.
Yeah.
But back to due process. And, we, you know, when we look at the due process rights, we have due process under law for the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. This is incorporated into the Bill of Rights. So what other, when we talk about right to due process, what types of things are included in due process? They talk about life, liberty, and property. It's pretty interesting and expansive set of rules.
Right. If you're talking about that, then you're talking about due process and self-incrimination. All of that would be under the Fifth Amendment. So those are the protections that, you know, would allow you to have a fair trial if you were accused of a crime, or that also the grand jury, that you have a right to the grand jury, and the state will take cases, felony cases, to the grand jury for presentment of the case to see if there was probable cause to make the arrest and to have the charge. So all of that, those are built-in protections for us in order to make sure that someone isn't, that is innocent, that it's, you know, convicted of a crime like Michael Morton or, you know, there's a whole slew of cases where it's found out that, you know, the exonerees now that we have, so.
Well, let's throw this in the mix. What about juveniles? I keep thinking about that Netflix case, the individual that they, and the police, the investigation of this kid was long and grueling, and anyone who's been gone to law school who's watched those tapes is horrified by what they did. How does the charging process and how does due process apply when you are a minor?
And a lot of parents will tell you, you know, they'll be upset because, you know, I'll get a call and say, oh, they detained my kid at school and they didn't even call me. Well, there's a short period of time where they can actually detain you and there's no arrest made and they'll interview you. So, without even having to call your parents. So that's not uncommon. But, you know, juvenile is different, especially with, like, bonds. You can't post bond unless they're going to try to, you know, try the juvenile as an adult. Just depends on their age and the nature of the offense, so.
It's a very just so different system entirely.
Yeah, it's very different, and, you know, the whole rehabilitation is and getting the juveniles and helping them early is always – you know, one of the main focuses with dealing with kids.
It's obviously good to keep them out of the system. Some of the things that you know, I was looking at before our program here, looking at our criminal due process rights, some of these things we kind of take for granted, you know, having a unbiased judge or jury, a notice of what you've been charged with, opportunity to be heard, right to present evidence and call witnesses, the right to know opposing evidence, the right to cross-examine opposing witnesses, having a decision that's, and we take these things for granted, having the judge make a decision or jury make a decision that's based solely on the evidence, not about how they feel about the person, good or bad,
mm-hmm.
The opportunity to be represented by counsel. I think it's, we very much take for granted that they're the tribunal will, the court prepares a written record of the evidence and that they specifically state in those written findings of fact and conclusions of law. We take a lot of these things for granted, don't we?
We do, and they're already built into the system, so we forget the basis for why all those things were added into the Constitution. You know, it was to protect you know, to protect us. And unfortunately, you know, I think that, you know, people forget about you do have those rights, you know.
Well, and also, you know, when we look at this, you know, that's just a quick list that I just jotted down. I felt like I was back in law school for a moment, getting confused on substantive
law
versus substantive versus procedural due process. Just always could never get my mind around that. I mean, I understand the criminal side, but the substantive one with the vagueness of laws kind of always threw me. But, you know, so anyway, so we look at our rights that we have, and we expect that there's a lot of people involved in following. We have a judge. We have a prosecutor. You know, we have the police, the sheriff's office. There's a lot of points from original investigation to an indictment, arrest, grand jury trial, and towards appeal, where things can go wrong. Could describe as the attorney, if someone comes to you and says, "I believe that my due process rights are violated. They may be already convicted and incarcerated, looking to they are within the window to appeal their case." What does that process look like from your end as a lawyer?
Well, I think it can be intimidating to, you know, so if you just have a criminal case and you have a defendant, I mean, all of those people are government officials. You have the, you know, the state of Texas, and they're represented by law enforcement, and, you know, they have their own attorneys, right, who have unlimited resources with the DA's office. Then you have the judge, who's elected, and then all the judge's employees are, you know, have been handpicked. So it's, you know, I think it can be very scary for someone who's never been through, you know, the criminal process. Or, I mean, it's the same with, you know, when we do divorces, you know, you always have to remember that this is the first time that someone's ever going through this, and it's probably the first and the last, right? And it can be very, very scary. And so making sure that everyone understands that up front of, okay, this is how this case could possibly go, or this is how, you know, and it's life-changing, right, you know?
Absolutely, a very stressful thing, especially when we look at how many people are incarcerated and had their right to legal counsel, but they had someone from the public defender's office who they may have had very limited time to talk to, and wonder if the public defender had time to properly prepare and defend that case, and they're looking for some assistance and review. Is that a you know, what would you tell that person?
What would I tell the exonerees?
Oh, well, just the people who are saying that I don't, you know, I want someone to look at my case at a public defender, and the public defender, they're not sure that they adequately defended them, or they're concerned
that
they
like
didn't have enough time.
Yeah, like ineffective counsel. Well,
right.
People,
I'm just looking at, if I'm in jail,
mm-hmm.
any part in the, you know, what can I look at, you know, to sort of, you know.
Well, I think, and that's what's sad, is I think that public defenders and court-appointed attorneys get a bad rap, but you have to understand that we have strict guidelines. We have so much, so many CLE hours that people have to do on an annual basis, and so I think that you, I mean, especially with capital crimes, you know, you're getting the best of the best because you have somebody who has so much experience, you know, in order to even be on the, like, the capital wheel or the first degree felony wheel in different counties. So it's not like you're just getting someone who doesn't, you know, who's not going to do a good job for you. I mean, also, you know, I'm always going to do my best job for you because I worked hard for my license and I don't want to give it back to the state, right?
Absolutely.
You know, there's there's good and there's bad, but a lot of times, you know, you're going to get some really experienced people, you know, helping you.
Well, and again, I'm going to point to television and the media where they, you know, often show the public defender is having the, you know, the stack of files and, you know, they're shuffling
mm-hmm.
through, you know, sort of
yeah.
like court where the small claims court, you know, that guy, the people up there do, you know, 50 cases a minute.
Yeah.
How are they doing that? And so that's what people believe in the media, and that the person just, I think the perception is the public defender really doesn't care. They're just doing it for a job. And I think that's a really incorrect perception.
Yeah. I think if you did that job, I think you actually truly care about people. I mean, it's just kind of like being in, you know, the legal field or whatever you do. If you're a nurse, you know, you truly care about people and helping them out. You know what I mean? If you didn't, then you're going to quit and go find a different job. But
absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I just think that, I don't know, the public defender's office can get a bad rap, but, you know, they have some really qualified, you know, attorneys. So, I mean, do they
absolutely.
Have a lot of cases? Well, there's a, you know, it depends on if crime is up or crime is down. Like in the juvenile world here, I mean, they're saying that it's actually crimes down, so we're not getting as many cases, and then criminal is always there. It's pretty consistent, but crime, I think, is, if you look across the board, that crime is actually down, even though the media is portraying that, you know, it's not that way, because it seems like every time you turn on the news that it's talking about some possible criminal
absolutely.
Case. Internationally.
Step away.
Even. Yeah. Yeah.
Step away from the news. Step away from Facebook, you know, go make some Christmas cookies or something. But speaking of all the hard work that people do in the community, I kind of talked over a half point in the show. But if you could, Leslie, tell us a few of the things that are going on at the Barrows Firm and all y'all's activities with everything charitable and volunteering and the community efforts making Fort Worth just a great place.
Yeah, it seems like it was, I mean, all the way up to October, and then we had National Adoption Day in November. It was just, we were doing so many things in the community. So it's kind of slowed down, you know, with the holidays, with Thanksgiving and, you know, kind of closing out some cases here. But we haven't had a ton of community service projects in November and December since it has been, you know, the holidays, and we're just trying to wind some cases down, and then we're going to take some days off to spend time with family members. But we'll be back in January and start up all of our, you know, fun community service projects. And, you know, the adoptions are always fun. And then, you know, we have just, you know, getting through doing a lot of seminars. And I think I'm speaking at a juvenile conference in February, the State Bar Juvenile Conference. So I'll be getting my presentation ready for that. And, but yeah, it'll all pick back up in 2017. So we're hoping to have a great 2017 and, you know, set some goals and hopefully accomplish those goals.
Absolutely. Well, we all look forward to that. Now, back to due process of law. I wanted to make a point where we talk a little bit about who can violate the due process of law and that it requires state actors acting under the color of law. Can you describe what that means?
Due process can be violated, you know, and I think I see it mostly, you know, with maybe prosecutors not, you know, giving you the evidence. I mean, that's usually what I would see. I don't know. Do you have any specifics?
Oh, I just think in general of the concept of state action and who is, you know, law enforcement, employees of the state, people who are sworn to uphold the law and the Constitution, as opposed to individuals. You know, so, you know, someone may say, you know, false arrest or imprisonment versus criminal person, mm-hmm. but if it's on a civil, two people, that would be something different. That would be, you know, a civil action.
I mean, you know, we've been seeing a lot with the arrest, you know, when people being arrested and I guess family members taping these arrests and feeling that their privacy rights were violated. I mean, I think we right now in the public is seeing a lot of that with law enforcement, you know, and I think there's probably good and there's probably some bad, you know, actors. But overall, usually that's where the due process violation would begin with, would be, you know, an overzealous, you know, law enforcement personnel or the prosecutors that, you know, withhold evidence, and you don't really see it with courts as much, you know, with judges, but that's what I was thinking that comes to the top of my head.
Also, the exonerated folks mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier, that's always very alarming to see cases, especially when DNA evidence came into being so popular. We saw so many people who whose cases were thrown out, and they were exonerated. They were, you know, free to go because the wrong person was sitting in jail and in prison for a crime they didn't commit.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us any positive stories about that so we can leave this topic on a positive note?
Well, I mean, you know, the big one that comes to mind, and I think Michael Morton, he posted today. I mean, the Michael Morton story is a pretty good, you know, example of, you know, someone being convicted of a crime falsely and doing a lot of time, right? And without the perseverance of people, of attorneys and a lot of people in the community, he could still be sitting in jail, you know, and he had posted today on Facebook saying it was, the 19th was his official exoneration day. And he actually posted his mugshot from the Wilco jail and his last mugshot, and then they released him. So he's only been out for 5 years. But, you know, I think the DNA and the Michael Morton, all that just has really kind of spiked all the district attorney's office in the state to have those programs in order to look at those old cases and make sure that we don't have anybody in jail is innocent and has been wrongly convicted.
Oh, I mean, what an absolutely terrifying prospect for a prosecutor, especially those in charge of departments, who, you know, would have to go to bed at night wondering if any of their incarcerated inmates that they've put in jail and prison have, you know, are really, you know, they always say, you know, my guy's innocent, my guy's innocent. Some of them really are, you know, which also, mm-hmm. and if, and, you know, which also brings into, you know, again, that Netflix Making a Murderer documentary, such a great thing to watch. And one of the things in there that people might not realize is the civil rights violation that may go along with that, and the civil case that some of these individuals file against the counties, if they were, you know, more like intentionally wronging them and you know, not following and giving them their due process rights to their life, liberty, and property. So another very interesting thing to talk about. As far as advice for people who haven't yet been charged, or maybe a witness, or are involved in an investigation when law enforcement's talking to them, they might not know what to do. They're afraid to say the wrong thing. What's your advice to people?
I would go meet with an attorney, because that's right. You don't know. You don't know how the whole process works. It's just like when you need surgery, you know, you're going to go interview several people and get, you know, second and third opinion. You know what I mean? You know, if it's like with everything that you do, you're always going to want to have someone that's an expert in the field help you out through the process and hold your hand and make sure you're not going to screw anything up, because it's life changing.
Well, especially when you know, we have a lot of armchair lawyers or grocery store lawyers who said that they know all about this stuff and they'll tell you. But what happened in there, even if it happened to them, facts are different in every type of case. Charges are different in every type of case. You could have the district attorney charging you, the grand jury charging you, all sorts of different things at play. So never assume that you know what you're dealing with until you talk to an experienced criminal law attorney. Absolutely agree. Any final thoughts on the topic of due process and innocent until proven guilty as we round out our program today, Leslie?
No, just ever if you or your family member think that you are possibly being investigated, then you need to get an attorney and seek counsel and make sure that you understand the process and what you're looking at.
Absolutely. And if someone needs to get a great attorney and get some help, how do they follow up with you?
Call the Barrows Firm at 817-481-1583.
All right. And that phone number is answered all 24 hours?
Yep.
There you go.
Yes.
So
24/7.
So 24/7. So Leslie does not being mind woken out of the middle of a dead sleep when it really matters. Absolutely correct.
Whatever you need.
There you
life
go.
Life doesn't always
all
stop
right
when you go to bed at 10.
Right. Well, the judge, I mean, a lot of people, I just picture all the phones going off, you know, judges getting a warrant, you know, they're texting back and forth.
Yeah, a lot of them use, the iPads and stuff. So, but there's always someone that has to work in the jails at night, or, you know what I mean, or heaven forbid you have to go to their house or something.
Or like Night Court. I always remember my parents always liked that show Night Court, you know, so
mm-hmm.
It was a fun thing.
That was a funny show.
It was a good show. At any rate, you know, again, an admonition on television and internet, get your facts from the source. You know, don't get your facts from the real world or what's on Facebook. Talk to a lawyer. Call Leslie. All right, that's enough for our show today. We've exhausted due process of law. People should do some research. Call Leslie Barrows if you have a question. Again, the law firm telephone number 817-481-1583. Always a good idea to put that in the cell phone under lawyer. Leslie, it's been a pleasure as always, and we will be back next month. Until then, you have a wonderful holiday season, and hope that you and everyone else out there has time to spend with family and friends and really celebrate the season. Of course, those of you who are spending the holidays trolling through Facebook or your newsletters or blogs or wherever, and come across trolling in a good sense, and come across this podcast, please go ahead and share it, because sometimes people are shy and private these days. I know it sounds absurd to suggest, but not everyone airs their dirty laundry out there. Some people are just looking, and we don't always hear them. So we like to share these podcasts with people so they can find the information that they need to be better educated consumers and citizens generally. So, that's about all I've got. Leslie, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good one. Yep. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.